south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start out today from this very interesting email. It comes from Ralph from New York. He titles it, A Letter to the Editor That Will Never Get Printed. He says, Dear Johnny, I'm one of the small business owners who got ransacked during the BLM riots. Man, did that get my plan B going on steroids. Yes, Johnny, I got ransacked to the tune of $90,000 in damages. But did you know insurance won't pay? Just another nail in the coffin that got me off the fence to get my plan B going. Yes, I've been paying premiums to my insurance company like clockwork for 23 years and they won't pay. Of course, they say if you read the fine print, and who reads that, it excludes acts of God, like tsunamis and earthquakes, war, civil unrest, riots, etc., etc. What else was it but a riot and civil unrest? It's been a few months, but I'm still fuming about it. You know what else gets my goat? It's those whiners who say they got the poop end of the stick when they get asinine progressive PC degrees that will never pay enough to make a good living. I'm talking about people with college degrees that will barely make you a living. I'd say most of the rioters were people on some kind of government assistance. All you gotta do is look at the crowd and you can tell they're on government assistance. Except maybe the organizer. There's the irony, huh? Johnny, I'm sick of the whiners who want money and success and jobs they like, but they never want to do the hard work and put the effort in. You can go to college to have fun and party. About 80% of the people do that. And those kind of degrees are a piece of cake. You just show up and get a C. And in some universities, they don't even grade you because it might hurt your feelings. Instead, you pass or fail. Or you can go to college, bust your ass, and get a degree that really counts. And as far as all this civil unrest, I think envy plays a big part in it. However, if you want to do great things or build a better mousetrap, there will be some suffering, sacrifice, and a lot of 18-hour days. And most millennials and Gen Xers don't want to work that hard. Too much studying, not enough hangout time. Can't have that. Instead, these deluded young Gen Xers get socially correct degrees in things like African American or Native American studies, cultural anthropology, feminism, etc. Degrees the famous psychologist Gad Saad says are the holy trinity of BS. Yep, if you get a socially correct degree, you'll never suffer, sacrifice, or put in 18-hour days. You'll never rise above middle class either. And for people who put in the 18-hour days and don't hang out on social media, that would be physicists, software geeks, engineers, MDs, and why they make the big bucks. And those people with socially conscious degrees never will, unless they hit the lottery or slip and fall in the right parking lot. And Johnny, you talk about in the past how kids going to university would take any dirty job just to have money for school or for expenses. You're right, but today, I don't think I ever met a 20-something whiner who had dirty fingernails, calloused palms, or sweated it out in the sun with an after-school or summer job. Yet they're the ones out in the streets and on anti-social media getting so offended and canceling people who have real jobs making real products. If those Gen Xers and millennials are so smart but underappreciated, how come they don't just grab the bull by the horns? Doesn't matter what kind of useless crap degree you might have, you can learn anything about anything on YouTube and the internet for free. Believe me, I've had this conversation with 20-somethings before, and they say, yeah, it's easy for you to say you're a success because you're white and privileged and had a leg up, a family with money, connections, etc., etc. That, they say, is why they're taking public transportation and I'm driving a nice car. White privilege, what else? So I say to these young kids, did you see Breaking Bad by any chance? Did you see Game of Thrones? The Walking Dead? Witcher? Of course you did. Well, if you do the math, you'll see that took at least 400 hours out of your life. And what'd you get for it? I say the next time a hit series explodes in the media, why don't you just get on the net and study graphic design or furniture making, essentials of crypto or hydroponics or solar installations or electrical wiring or internet marketing? Because I assure you, everyone cannot be a TikTok star. And I also guarantee you, with 400 hours of studying anything, you'll be proficient enough to be a no BS expert. Even have a successful podcast or YouTube channel on it. Of course, to be the best of the best, you'll need to put in that stereotypical 10,000 hours. But these days, you have no excuse at all not to excel in something you like and that the world actually needs. There are a million and one things you could do or make that people really want to buy. So when did our social system collapse? When did it all fall down? I think it's a symptom of the so-called it takes a village BS, where everyone's supposed to help you and each other and share everything. That's pure socialism, man. And another thing that really bugs me, Johnny, and shows how stupid people are and what they don't teach them in school. When people say capitalism has failed us, it's obvious people who say that don't know what capitalism is. Every physical thing you enjoy in life was produced by people under the pressure of competition and freedom to experiment, provided by capitalism. Not one single communist or socialist country has produced anything to make yours or my life more convenient, happier, or more comfortable. If you can think of something, please let me know. No inventions or innovations come out of socialism. There's no pressure to compete or excel with socialism. As for capitalism, we don't have pure capitalism. We have government-sponsored, preferential, crony capitalism that doles out favors, tax breaks, contracts, monopolies, and backroom deals to the highest campaign donor. Or even more sneakily, big corporations and banks promise shitbag politicians courtesy seats on the Lockheed or General Dynamics or Pfizer board when they retire from Congress. Oh, to be on the board of a big corporation. What a sacrifice. They only meet twice a year in an Aspen resort and get a $2 million salary. Or if you're a Bush, Clinton, or Obama, you get a $500,000 to speak for a half hour. By the way, how is it Obama is worth $18 million all of a sudden? He even has his own Hollywood movie production company. Amazing how he could go from Chicago politics, where his income statement said he made $180K a year, and he and his football player wife were worth about $300,000 on paper. Was a small leap from $300,000 to $18 million net worth, huh? That's how crony capitalism works and why the U.S. has not approved the various rapid $5 COVID testing kits. There's no money in it for Pfizer and Merck. So please, don't tell me capitalism failed or capitalism doesn't work or capitalism destroyed our culture. Hey, you can't rule it out, but don't say that until we have actual capitalism, please. So, Johnny, that's my sob story. My letter to the New York Times editor that'll never get published. But the silver lining is that I'm getting out of Dodge by summer. For good or for bad, my plan B destination is Mexico. That's only because my wife's family is from there, so I have a built-in network. And oh, she speaks Spanish and I don't. I'm kicking myself now for not paying attention in Spanish class. I took a year of it in high school, and I'm kind of gun-shy to use it. What with my embarrassingly terrible gringo accent and all. Signed, Ralph from New York en route to Mexico. Well, Ralph, I've got nothing to add. I'm speechless. That's a first. And about being embarrassed to use your crappy Spanish whilst down in Latin America? Well, when I first got down, I was in that boat too. But one thing you'll notice soon enough, Latinos and Latinas are very forgiving. Unlike certain places in the world, like, for instance, France, where they'll rudely treat you like a retard if you don't get the language thing right. Wait. Oh no, Johnny said the R word. Time to call the social media police. Cancel them. I'm waiting. Are we still here? We still on the air? I guess so. Maybe that's just strike two. Anyway, here in Latin America, Latinos will cut you tons of slack and they'll always give you a break and help you out if your Spanish sucks. You'll see. It's part of your gringo advantage. They'll never laugh at your bad Spanish or even behind your back when you walk away. Unlike the French. So by all means, no matter how bad your Spanish is, do give it a try. All right, let's talk a little bit about the cost of living, inflation, and price creep here in Latin America. Now, as much as you might want to disagree with me on this one, up in the States and throughout the first world, food and commodity prices are rising rapidly, though governments deny it. But you know how governments lie. Sure, rents are going down because so many places have gone out of business and people aren't current on their rent. So to keep units filled, landlords have to drop their prices. And as far as food, the fact is, worldwide agricultural commodity prices are up nearly 40% since August. Just look it up. Are you experiencing sticker shock when you go to the grocery store? Well, down here in Latin America, where food prices are a quarter to a third what they are up in the States, that is, stuff that's grown or produced in the country you live in, still, prices down here are on the rise too, but not rents. They're going down. So as the Fed keeps printing money and we're more than a year into this COVID-iot stuff, you can expect food supply and food chain disruptions on imported foods, but much less so for food and produce that's grown and harvested in your immediate area. And that's really one of the benefits of being in Latin America, because every town and city has a gigantic market or two or 10, and all that stuff's being brought in by local truck farmers, which is absolutely not true if you live in most cities and towns up in the state. Oh, there's tons of agriculture all right up in the states, but most of it's industrial farming, monoculture, corn, soybeans, etc. Seems like all the fruits and vegetables in Walmart are coming from thousands of miles away, like California, Mexico, and Chile. So it is true, the food and commodities prices are going up here in Latin America, but they're definitely not going up any faster than they are for you up in the States. So if, for example, 2 years ago an avocado for you up in the States costs $1, and down here it costs 25 cents, and now it's $2 up by you, well, it's going to be 50 cents in Latin America. So the price ratio remains the same, though everything's going up. And where it ends, nobody knows. One thing's for sure, inflation's rearing its ugly head, and this will not end well. But for sure, you'll be much better off living in Latin America. All right, here's an email from Marco. He says, "Hey, Johnny, longtime Canadian listener and fan here. Wondering if you have any thoughts on Costa Rica that you can share from an expat perspective." And we all know the cost of living is higher in Costa Rica versus the rest of Latin America. What do you get back in return? Better health care? Lower crime? In short, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great on Costa Rica. Or as Canadians like to call it, Costa Rica. In fact, that's one way you can spot a Canadian right off when they say Costa Rica. Where that comes from, who knows, eh? Well, Marco, you're a longtime listener, so you probably know how I feel about Costa Rica. You know, I lived there nearly 3 years myself. Long time ago, but I lived there before the gringos really took over. I personally got ripped off there by a business partner who was Canadian, believe it or not. And I watched every single one of my friends and acquaintances down there get ripped off in one way or another too. Most often, believe it or not, from gringos or Latino lawyers. And did you know in Costa Rica, they've got a common law marriage thing going where a lot of gringos get scammed after they move in with their girlfriends and break up for whatever reason. And even though the law says that if you've been living together for 3 years or more, it's a common law marriage, the judges, being Costa Ricans themselves, and fully invested in the idea that gringos have lots of dough and are easy marks too. They've been known to hand out judgments in favor of the lady when a couple's only been living together for 6 months. So if you're caught in that situation where you broke up with your girlfriend who you've been living with, no matter how short or long the time frame, she's got 2 years after the date she left or you kicked her out, or she kicked you out, to petition the civil court for half of everything you've got. And I've known a few gringos who had bad breakups and had to sweat it out for 2 years, just hoping those papers never get served. And I also know a couple of gringos who left the country just to avoid that mess, with one gringo friend of mine flying back for a month and a half to the States to do some business. And when he came back to Costa Rica, he couldn't get back into his own apartment. The locks were changed and his supposed soulmate had moved in, her brother, her mother, and her grandma. And when he went to court, the judge said she was within her legal right because she'd been living with him for over 2 years and was just as much an owner of the place as he was. Now, every Latin country has slightly different rules about the common law thing. But most of the time, the judges will rule in the lady's favor, especially if you have a kid or two, even if they're not your kids. Best way around that, don't have any substantial property in your name. Have it in an SA corporation or even in your lawyer's name, because half of nothing is nothing. But then again, if you're talking about Costa Rica, the lawyers are a big part of the problem. Now, you hear a lot of gringos and expats say there's nothing like Costa Rica. It's just so beautiful. It's got that fantastic tropical jungle-like atmosphere, but yet it's kind of tame. Tamed, of course, by the tens of thousands of gringos there and brought up the first world speed. Well, let me tell you, there's at least 10 other Latin American countries that are just as beautiful, just as tropical, just as many cool things to do, if not more. But somehow Costa Rica's got this reputation, it's from gringo marketing, of course, that there's no other place like it. Well, sorry to clue you in, but you can find everything that Costa Rica has and more in Mexico, Guatemala, Colombia, Brazil, and quite a few other countries, and the cost of living is much less too. And geographically, what Costa Rica is really missing is the Altiplano, so it's always pretty hot. Now, San Jose is up around 3,000 feet above sea level, not quite in the Altiplano, but you do sweat less at 3,000 feet than at sea level. However, my real objection to living in Costa Rica is that the place is so overrun with gringos that people have become jaded. Imagine you live in a small town in Wisconsin, Ohio, Illinois, and in the last 10 years, just loads of wealthy Koreans moved into your country and started setting up shop everywhere. or could be wealthy Italians or wealthy people from India. I assure you it will build resentment and get on your nerves when everyone piling in has more money and means than you have, and they start turning your city into a version of where they came from. And there's really no way for you to get a piece of that. And you end up working for them because your whole economy depends on them being there. You know what that does to the locals? It makes them jaded, false, and insincere. Now, I'm not saying all of them are, but all you have to do is talk to practically anyone who's lived in Costa Rica for more than a year, and you'll hear all kinds of negative stories. So then where does all that positive marketing and promotion come from? Well, it's from the vacationing first world tourists who come back with a really great experience because they're only there for a couple of weeks at the most. And of course, when you're on vacation, you're in a completely different state of mind. You've got the rose-colored glasses on, you take pre-planned tours, stay in upscale resorts and hotels. You have those nice pre-planned hand-holding kumbaya, jungle, beach, hiking, and river rafting excursion experiences. You've got the rose-colored glasses on the whole time. And when you get back home, you just can't rave enough about the place. But as far as a plan B, if you want to know what it's really like, talk to someone who's been living there more than a year. You won't get real information for people who just pop in and out on vacation. And Marco, you asked about crime. Well, it's true Costa Rica's low on the scale of violent crime, but it's very high. In fact, it's worse than a lot of other Latin American countries on petty crime, robberies, extortions. Every gringo I know who's ever lived there has been a victim, whether it's your cleaning lady, gardener, the guard in your gated community, stealing tools, bicycles, laundry detergent. Yep, that's right, laundry detergent. Caught my cleaning lady doing that once. Might even be your own lawyer, scamming you with bogus charges. To Costa Ricans, you are the chicken that needs plucking. The thing is, we all come down sort of naive. Gringos are noted for trusting people. I've heard Latinos tell me that many times, but after a year or so in country, us gringos and expats get wise and harden up fast. Well, some of us do, and others get really skinned and we go back home with our tail between our legs. But you know, it looks like petty crime is up everywhere. I mean, there's an article today in the New York Times. The headline says 90,000 packages are stolen in New York City every single day. And most of those are Amazon packages left in a porch or a breezeway. In fact, just the other day, my brother in Chicago told me he's had his Amazon packages stolen from his porch 3 separate times in the past year. So he installed one of those doorbell cameras that you can monitor with your cell phone. Now, during the day, he's away a lot. And sure enough, about 2 weeks ago, he got a notification on his phone that someone was ringing the buzzer. It was the UPS guy delivering some Amazon packages. 10 minutes later, he got a notification on his phone from his motion detector. He couldn't believe it. A guy walked up, stole his packages, and when he got to the curb, he turned around, ran back up to the house, pulled out a screwdriver, and swiped the doorbell camera. So I guess in the last few years, petty crime, in the U.S. anyway, is directly proportional to the rise of Amazon. Though I have to admit, my brother doesn't live in a 4-star neighborhood. He could, all right, but he's got a bunch of duplexes in a mixed area, and he lives in one of them. He's the landlord, but insists on doing the repairs and maintenance himself. He likes fixing things, so it gives him something to do. By the way, this article says in the States, 43% of Americans shopping online experienced package theft in the last year. And 2/3 of that 43% have had packages stolen multiple times. So then what's that got to do with Latin America? Well, at least you won't get your Amazon or online package orders stolen because you actually have to go down to the courier office to pick them up personally. Or when your packages arrive, you just shoot them a message and they'll send out a guy on a motorcycle with your package. You pay an extra $2 or $3 for that. Now, I order stuff online. I've been doing it for years and I've never once lost an item. And only one item in all that time came damaged. A glass bottle, yeah, glass bottle of liposomal vitamin C. Busted to smithereens, but they replaced it. So anyway, a lot of us guys who've been in Latin America a long time, we can get pretty cynical. One big problem I see all the time is when a long-time expat gringo meets an extremely excited expat gonna-be. And the seasoned expat sees all those signs of a chicken waiting to be plucked. Sometimes you see yourself in that person. Anyway, newbies are upbeat and excited and they've got 100 questions. Hell, when I first came down, I did. And sometimes your answers will make you sound like a pessimist or a cynic. But it seems their sense of wonder and excitement, being in a new country and all, overrides all the warnings and cautions you give them. Seems they have to make their own mistakes and get ripped off a couple of times to learn that lesson. In any case, I've come up with a few suggestions for newbie expats. But most of the time, they're not listening. So they fall into the same traps that me and so many other expat gringos do when we first arrive. Suggestion number one, never become a business partner with a Latino. unless he's got equal skin in the game. That is, he's put some resources into it. God, you don't know how many gringos and expats partner up with Latinos who've got zero skin in the game. And all they promise, and it seems really big to you at the time, is that they know the system. They know people. They're connected. They can make things happen that you can't because you're a gringo or your Spanish skills suck. And you know, if that were actually true, it does sound great, but rarely is it actually true. However, if that Latino has just as much skin in the game as you do, he's invested his own dough, then he's got just as much to lose if he doesn't come through. Suggestion number two, if you're going to settle in a country like Costa Rica or any other place that's well on the gringo tourist trail, don't trust gringos or anyone with deals that are too good to be true, especially land and property deals. That is, unless you don't mind buying a piece of beachfront property with dubious paperwork and has probably been sold to a couple of other gringos who thought they hit the jackpot too. Here's another suggestion, and this one's one of the hardest ones to keep. Never lend money to Latinos or Latinas. And if you do, always know that there's probably a 90% possibility you're not going to get it all back. So if you do lend someone money, think of it as a gift, because that's what it will probably end up being. Here's another suggestion that most people don't heed, but it's almost always true. If you're starting a business, however long it takes to get the right paperwork together to get it up and running and open, your lawyer will estimate that for you. Well, you're in the land of mañana time, so you should double his estimate. Same thing goes for what it's going to cost to open that business. Whatever your estimate is, you should double that too. Now, you longtime listeners have heard me say it's ridiculously cheap to start a brick and mortar business down here. And as for internet businesses, that's usually beyond ridiculously cheap. So, for example, if you decide to open up a bar and restaurant, if you're up in the States, something like that might cost you $200,000 or a lot more, but let's just say 200 grand. Now, if you open that same kind of bar and restaurant in Costa Rica, let's say, you might crunch numbers and figure it'll be about 30 grand. Hell of a deal, right? Well, I'm saying you should double that, make it 60 grand. That just seems to be the way it goes with any business here. Still, way below first world prices, but that seems to be a big problem with almost every gringo and expat who takes a shot at opening a brick and mortar business. They underestimate the overruns and sometimes the necessary bribes. And lastly, don't trust your Latino lawyer unless you've known him for a long, long time or he's got a nice track record with other gringos and expats, and everyone agrees he's an honest guy. Speaking of Costa Rica, Marco, you know, because there's so many gringos there, there's a lot of good organized data coming out of the place because gringos are good record keepers. And one of the things that's really bothersome about the Latin culture in general is that they're so indebted. Hey, you know, most U.S. citizens are in debt up to their earballs, too, especially with this COVIDiot thing. Did I say earballs? Now, here are some statistics I'm sure you never heard before. And I'm not talking about big mortgage debt like in the hundreds of thousands. I'm just talking about credit card debts and loans. The fact is, as of 2020, there are only 8 countries in the world where people spend less than 10% of their household income on food. You know, grub. You got the U.K., Switzerland, Ireland, Austria, Canada, Australia, Singapore, and the U.S. That means if food prices shoot up, people in those 8 countries certainly aren't going to be hurting that much. Then there's Latin America, where in most of those 20 countries, the average household spends 30 to 40% of their income on food. For example, in Costa Rica, it's 30%, in Guatemala, 40%. So that means when Latin American families take out loans or end up on credit or a payment plan, they really get strapped. So then why bring this up? Well, if you're a gringo with a soft heart and some Latino you know hits you up for a loan, if you think you're actually going to get paid back, you should ask the guy how many other businesses or people he's into for a loan. Because if he's the typical Latino, he's paying off or is on the hook for at least 3 loans. And I got that data from a new study that just came out from the Office of Consumer Finances, the OFC, a survey conducted throughout Latin America during November of 2020. Since we're talking about Costa Rica, in their survey of indebtedness of Costa Rican household, of which 1,200 families were surveyed from all over the country, ages 18 to 65 years old, they were right in line with other Latin countries. The average Costa Rican has 2.5 to 3 debts they're paying off right now, not including a house mortgage, with more than half of those families paying from 30 to 60% of their household income, just paying off those debts. So if you want to be an optimist and you want to be kind, let's say the average Costa Rican is paying around 30% of his household income for debts and 30% for food. That means he's got 40% of his income left to spend on everything else. However, it says at least 25% of Costa Rican families spend more than 60% of their household income on debt service. So if you add the 30% they pay on food, they've got almost nothing left for anything else. That's one out of four people. So the lesson here is everyone wants nice, modern things. And the marketers and the creditors have won that game, especially in the third world when the vast majority of the population are not that sophisticated when it comes to debt, debt service, budgeting, numbers, and finances. Yeah, right, like most Americans are. Bottom line, most Latinos are deep in a financial hole with little hope of getting out from under it, which is why 90% of families have no real savings at all. Now, where have I heard that before? All right, about this household indebtedness thing. We mentioned the unsophisticated homeowner often gets sucked in by marketers and credit card companies. The surprising thing, though, when you read the synopsis of the data, it says, when reviewing the data based on family educational level, it seems people with more years of study, people with more diplomas and degrees, tend to have more debts than families with lower educational levels. Now, I don't know if that makes sense or not, but that's how it turns out. Perhaps it's because people with higher educational levels are more targeted by banks and credit card companies because they tend to make more money than the average person. So, bottom line, higher educated Latins are on a bigger treadmill. So, just keep that in mind if you ever find yourself being pitched by a Latino for a business idea. Oh, and keep that in mind when one of them hits you up for a loan. Now, expat Eddie, who's been very successful in business, he tells me he gets hit up for loans all the time by his girlfriend's relatives. And he does help out the deserving ones once in a while, fully knowing he's never going to get the dough back. But he tells me he always asks this one question when someone hits him up for a loan. He asks, so then why doesn't the bank lend you the money? And inevitably, the guy will say, because I don't qualify. To which Eddie will respond, you mean I should lend you the money even though all those financial wizards at the bank say you're not a good risk? Then Eddie will ask him, how much money do you have in a savings account at the bank? And that, Eddie says, is usually the end of the conversation. Though sometimes Eddie does give him the money. He asks those questions because he wants to see him squirm a bit. You know, work for the money, he says. By the way, that Latino household indebtedness survey, it concludes by saying this, quote, there's a high percentage of the population that has a complicated indebtedness issue to the point that in many cases, the payment of installments exceeds their household income. How is that possible? Then there are some editorial comments, one of which says, unfortunately, history shows us that every generation becomes more indebted than their parents' generation. Sound familiar? It should.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.